Incredible edibles start with Loran. Professional bakery emulsions, super strength flavors, and candy mixes from Loran make it easier than ever to create your own delicious edible experience. Bite Me listeners in the contiguous 48 receive 15% off their order at loranoils.com. Just enter Bite Me 15 at checkout. For listeners outside the 48, email customercare@loranoils.com for a list of distributors and retailers near you and tell them Marge sent you. In this week's episode, I sit down with Chef Charlene Kaabe, a culinary creative and cannapreneur who is changing the game when it comes to cooking with cannabis. Welcome to Bite Me, the show about edibles, where I help you take control of your high life. I'm your host and certified ganja Marge, and I love helping cooks make safe and effective edibles at home. I'm so glad you're here, and thank you for joining me today. In this conversation with Chef Charlene, we touch on a variety of different topics, including her early influences, how she uses concentrates to make potent edibles, her own edibles line that she's working on, her work with the People's Ecosystem. One thing we don't get a chance to touch on is how Chef Charlene was the first Filipino-American to win the Food Network's Chopped Cooking Competition. Chef Charlene has been creating in the kitchen for a very long time, and she's been cooking with cannabis for almost as long. So I think you're going to learn something from this conversation, and I hope you can apply it to some of your own edibles making in the kitchen. Please enjoy this conversation with Chef Charlene Kaabe. All right. Today, I am joined by Chef Charlene Kaabe, and I'm super excited to have you on the show, Charlene. Thank you so much for joining me today. And I just hope you could say hello for a minute to the listeners of Bite Me, the show about edibles.
Sure. Hi. Good morning, everyone. Chef Charlene here. I'm excited to be on the podcast.
Yes. Now, Charlene, you have a ton of experience in the kitchen. I'm pretty envious about that. And I've read that you were a self-taught cook. And I was hoping you could tell me a little bit about who or what were your biggest influences.
Sure. I would say, you know, my biggest influences would be my family. It goes as far back as my grandmother to my mother and my older sister. You know, in this long lineage of cooks, my mom would always work so much. So my grandmother would be the one at our house, and she pretty much cared for me during the day. And with that said, she's always in the kitchen. I was always around, running around in the house. I have many memories of in the kitchen stirring the pot, washing vegetables to make it seem like I was doing something, you know. I usually couldn't keep my hands out of the pot. I would get in trouble for being in the kitchen, really. And you know, as she passed, in my younger teen, like around 12 or 13, my mom's always been a cook as well. So if my grandma wasn't just caring for me, my mom would also be in the kitchen. And you know, come the weekend, oh my gosh, it was just a feast. You know, right. As far as my sister, we're only like 4 years apart, and she's always loved to cook. She's a big foodie. She's taught me a lot of the, words or language behind it. And I'm like, what is that? And she's like, you got to try this Pecoraro cheese or something like
right.
that.
Yeah.
So I would say, yeah, my immediate family, we've always, food has always been our passion and in our culture.
Yeah, that's really great. So when did you start cooking then? You must have started cooking pretty young if you're stirring the pot and getting in your grandmother's way.
you know, in the Philippine culture, like when it came to cooking for parties, it's always at the kitchen table, you know, prepping. So as they were doing lumpia, you know, the young ones would try to hop in and try to roll the lumpia egg roll. They're like egg rolls. But as far as like really cooking, I think it was like my younger teenage years when I used to babysit and I would make soup for the kids. And it wasn't much. And I remember I got in trouble from their parents because they were like, we don't want you to be using no fire or, you know, the stove.
Right.
But it's always like been second nature to me, like growing up after school, I would go to like my best friend's houses. You know, we were like latchkey kids. Our parents wouldn't be home. Mm-hmm. We'd be left at the house. I would take a can of corned beef and make a whole meal, you know, feeding all of my five friends. So I would say, yeah, my younger years.
Right.
I already was making dishes.
And I love that too, because one of my daughters started cooking at a really young age. Like she would love to start, you know, just cooking like eggs and stuff like that mm-hmm. when she was about 8. So I always love to encourage my kids to cook as well, because then they're more self-reliant. So I'm surprised at the people that you were babysitting that they didn't want you using the stove, because I mean, fresh cooked food versus craft dinner or something, of course.
They were happy, but also, you know, it did make them nervous. So
right. Yeah. Yeah. Now, when did you first start cooking with cannabis then?
The cooking with cannabis didn't come until my younger adult years, probably my 20s. 20s or even in the early or late teens, but it wasn't correct. Like the way I would extract it, it wasn't correct. You know, back in the day, they'd say, "Oh, you just take the leaves and then you put it and just seep it in the butter and you'll feel high." It didn't work like that. So come most of my extractions I was fascinated in making brownies. My friend was a trimmer, and what happened was he would ask me, be like, "You want some trim? Like, they're just going to throw it away." And that's when they, you know, concentrates wasn't a thing. And it was a lot. It was a garbage bag full of trim. And I'm like, yes. Like, you know, in my mind, I was thinking, I can make tons of butter. I can make tons of brownies and cookies. That was the first two foods that came to mind. And I had a crock pot. And that was the best way to start. You have a crock pot, you have some flour. And I remember I put as much flour as I could, or the trim in that crock pot, to absorb it with the butter. And the internet, I mean, the internet was there, but there was not enough resources to get the information. Mm-hmm. Enough to get, you know, so strained it. I remember I put them in little containers. I would go to the Dollar Tree store and, I'd have them in little containers and had your box of brownies or cake mix, followed the instructions. And I made my first batch of edibles through a box of, baked goods. I'm sure it was brownies, because brownies was a thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember it was just overly concentrated, because I remember they said, like, well, just keep it in the crock pot for over 24 hours. So it seeped in it, and, you know, flour trim, like, I didn't know the potency, but it was so good that I would even smoke the trim.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's when, you know, and that's how I gauged it. I'm like, okay, I could smoke this joint. I can use the trim and smoke the joint. Smoke it as a joint, and it was still good. Like, it's like a fresh joint. So I can imagine that the dosing was really high.
yeah. That's a classic way to get started, though, with the boxed mix from the store. Like, it's absolutely such an easy way. But it's fortunate that you had a friend with such good trim, because a lot of the times it's not nearly as nice as that. Yeah. Would you say that you prefer sweet or savory edibles?
You know, sweet came first.
Right.
You know, it was influenced by media, you know, by social and all that. It would be sweet. But now, as you know, I opened a restaurant and cooking, you know, I learned that cooking is my passion. I love doing savory as well. But it is leaning more on the sweet side. But unfortunately, due to my health with diabetes, I'm trying to do a balance, less sugar, healthier, but yet still enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would say more on the sweet side.
I'm probably the same too, because I do have a sweet tooth, and a lot of edibles do love themselves really naturally to sweets. Like you said, the classic pot brownie is an example.
Yeah.
Now, it sounds like too, like from what you're telling me, in the early days when you had this inaccuracy in judging potency, do you have any stories to tell about a time when you probably consumed a bit too much? Because I know I have a couple.
I have several. Yeah. let's see, would it be the edibles on edibles or the concert? Because I've had different experiences. Yeah. I would say there's this one person that made these amazing biscottis. He was known for making these biscottis. And I remember my friend was like, you want some biscottis? And I was like, I'm not fond of biscottis. And he's like, well, it's like a stick of cookie, basically. So he made these amazing chocolate chip biscottis, but they were crazy high. Like, you could not even eat the whole thing. And in your mind, you would think like, well, why not? This is the whole thing. You know, you could have a biscotti with, you know, whatever beverage. And literally like a fifth of it will put you out. So I was known to bring the party to the party. I brought these biscottis to camp, to a camping trip. And my friends, there was about 15 of us. We rolled pretty deep. And I remember it was like the second night from the third night where we're like, this is the day that we party. So let's party before we leave. So we started bright and early. You know, when you're camping, you wake up and you're like, let's do this. So I literally passed out a piece of the biscotti. Literally, I had like maybe two biscottis. So you can imagine that size. And I divided it within like probably 10 to 12. Not everyone took it because I knew a few of my friends were just not into it. So I divided it amongst more than 10 of us. We all ate it. It took an hour for us to really for it to really kick in. We all took a hike by the water, and that's all by the water, you know, like it was rocky and in part sand. And you just saw all of us. We all got silly. Folks were just laying out, you know, staring at the sky. It was wild, but it was fun. Like, we're pretty there. I mean, the worst thing that happened, that people just wanted to go to bed or just really lay out all day. It was just funny because we were, you know, you just know it all hit us because all our eyes got really, really slim. You could tell it was more indica leaning because we were more just like really sedated.
Right.
But it was the biggest laughing party by the water.
Yeah, that's always the best. So it sounds like you had a good experience, which is nice because sometimes when you take a bit too much, that can be a not so good experience. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, it doesn't end there.
Okay.
Then you have the ones, the more bolder, like myself and a few others. We take more, and that took a turn. You got the spins. Yeah, the spins, you know, and then some projectile. A nap, a long nap till nighttime, and we woke up like, what happened? But that's always the worst case. It's that you take too much, you get the spins, you either, you know, vomit, and then you pass out for a long while, and you wake up like, what happened?
Right. No, that is very true. Like, that it could be a lot worse for sure. That is one reason why I do like to make my edibles a little less potent, because I usually want to eat the whole biscotti, and it sounds like I probably couldn't have handled that, but fortunately it sounds like most people had a good time. But now, what are your go-to edibles to make when you just want to have something on hand after a busy day? Do you have sort of a go-to?
Usually my go-to, well, right now I really love beverages. There's a lot of different products out there. I'll speak about it later about products, but I'm loving beverages right now. It's very easy to consume. I don't really drink much alcohol. It's more celebratory nowadays. And when it comes to my go-to edibles, it'd either be gummies, beverages, or even just like small treats, you know, like I've had like granola, I've had popcorn, but whatever's easiest is usually gummies. But again, I've been keeping like a good batch of beverages in my fridge where I just put a little bit in my juice, right now my favorite mocktail is a little bit of orange juice and cranberry and a squeeze of lemon.
And that sounds really nice.
Or like I'll put it in my sparkling beverage, and then I just sip it, and it's healing. I feel good, you know, like you know, nowadays, like, my anxiety is so high that, like, I just need something to take the edge off, you know, mm-hmm. just, like, look, we're got a roof over our head and it's all good. So,
right. I think a lot of people feel that way too about the anxiety, and beverages are amazing as well because they do kind of kick in a little faster usually, and it doesn't necessarily last as long. So sometimes that can lend itself well. But now I have read, and you kind of mentioned earlier about how you like to use concentrates in terms of making your edibles, and you find that it's more accurate for dosing. Can you walk me through your extraction process and why you prefer concentrates versus flower?
Sure. I prefer it that way because that was, well, it just brings it back to when I first learned how to dose correctly. I was such a, I was so intrigued with extraction. I knew that there was a better way of extracting flower and get a higher THC yield. And that's when YouTube was around. And I had friends that would take also trim and extract it into cannabis oil. And I was like, well, how do you do that? So it's pretty much like making an alcohol tincture. Mm-hmm. And once I learned that, basically you take a strong high percentage alcohol or alcohol, a grain of alcohol, and you take that, then you take a certain amount of, let's say, flour, trim, shake, whatever material you have, basically it's the flour itself. And then you take that, but first you would have to decarboxylate it. You'll mm-hmm. see a lot of things that you have to decarboxylate the flower first. And that means you're basically just activating the THC in the flower. Once it's activated, then you could do any type of extraction, whether it's with another oil or an alcohol extraction. There's so many ways. But once it's decarboxylated, you could literally just chew on the flower. But most people don't. So yeah, I chose that way because I got a higher yield and percentage. So after I decarboxylate, I'll take the grain of alcohol. I'll mix it with let's say an ounce or actually like 2 ounces of trim. I shake it with the alcohol. Then I strain that. So that substance, and some folks call it the green dragon. Mm-hmm. So it's like the alcohol basically stripped. Excuse me, the alcohol basically stripped the cannabis of the THC that way. It basically washes it, some folks would say. I do like two runs of washing the flower with the alcohol, and then that alcohol, pretty much you could toss it. Okay. You could, you know, again, try to squeeze more out of it, or not necessarily squeeze more out of it, but then it breaks it down, and you don't want... Ideally, you want less plant material in the mixture. So cheesecloth must come in handy, and you strain the flower from the green dragon. Then you take that green dragon, and then it has to evaporate or purge. That way, there's machinery for that nowadays. It is dangerous of purging it in your own home because there's alcohol. But again, the easiest way is that if you let it just, like, let's say in a small little pan, let it evaporate. And then what's left is the oil. So once I purged it, the first time I did it, or the few times that I've done it in my past, I would get this thick tar looking oil. And I remember, I would put in a joint and I would feel good. And then I was like, well, let me go mix it in with, cause it's an oil, right? And an oil will mix, but you can't mix it in like water, you know, cause all mm-hmm. oil and water don't mix, or, you know, so understanding that, well, it's just as thick as like an oil. So I would mix it with butter or canola oil and coconut oil. Like, I was like, this is limitless. Now I could cook in so many different things with it. But the main thing that really got me in selecting it that way is because I end up to test a little batch. There was a testing center a few minutes from my house. I was like, I got to get it tested, you know? And that's when prices for testing got lowered, like just for a gram of my oil, I think it was like under $100. And I was like, yeah, that's totally worth it. If I test it, then I can figure out how much is in there then I could disperse and, you know, it's all math. It's just adding, subtracting. I mean, if you're a cook, you, but if you don't go by recipes, it'll be challenging. But again, it's all math. You know, once you know that, then it's easy. You get a 500 milligram. So rewind a little bit. I went to the testing place. They tested it. My oil for 1 gram was about 500 milligrams. So that was an easy number to test. That's like really high. Most oils, let's say if you have the proper machinery now, you can get it to up to 1,000 milligrams per gram.
Wow.
So just to backtrack, so 500 milligrams is still high. You have vape pens that are about that, that average 500 up to 1,000 milligrams. So, and this was like a few years ago. This was, I think, more than 10 years ago. And 500 was my happy number. I was like, great. If I use 1 gram of this in my brownies, a tray of brownies, that whole thing is 500 milligrams. Mm-hmm. If I cut it, you know, 10 times, that means each brownie is going to be 50 milligrams, which is crazy. So I cut the brownie again 4 times.
Yep.
And then, you know, 50 divided by 4 is average about a little over, what, 10 milligrams. So what? 50 divided by 4 is like what?
It'd be like
12.
Yeah, about 12, that. Yeah.
12, 13 milligrams, which is nice, you know? Mm-hmm. And then once I got that down, I was like, great. So I had these little brownie nuggets and I would give them out to friends and they were always skeptical. But knowing that I could dose it at a low thing where they could just enjoy it, it was great. Like, that's how I build my rapport. That's how I build, folks like that actually trusted my edibles. I was not in the legal market. I was in the legacy market. And I mean, that was the biggest turning point for me. From there, I knew it was possible to create a medicine or another way of, you know, of just healing, you know, or just like a sleep aid or a little bit, you know, like, when it comes to weed, it's either you're building your appetite, you want to sleep, or you want to help with some type of pain, but literally just take the edge off of things too. Mm-hmm. So at a low dose, like, it was great. You know, like, I love joints. So it was like having that one little brownie nugget was like having a joint.
Right. And it's nice too, because like that nugget, if you do have somebody that has a higher tolerance, then they can just eat two. I mean, exactly. That's not terrible, right? When you can eat two. So just to recap then, so when you refer to concentrates, you're referring to your own like alcohol-based tincture that you've reduced down into an oil and you're using that to infuse your butters and coconut oils and all that kind of thing.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
It was called cannabis oil or Rick Simpson oil is what.
Right. Yeah. I was just looking some of that up recently to try some of that myself. But then I read a lot of the parts about the evaporating alcohol and I thought I better wait until summertime because I don't want to do it in my kitchen. I happen to have a gas stove and I'm super paranoid. So
I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, again, nowadays it's like there's enough products out there. That are cleaner, more efficient. Mm-hmm. But again, if you're a home, you know, if you really want to do it at home, there's other alternate ways. So many ways.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, as far as the terpene content, I'm assuming that would strip the cannabis of all its terpenes.
For the most part, when the term they use is full spectrum, cannabis oil or cannabis oil or Rick Simpson oil, that's technically called full spectrum. So it should, it can strip the terpenes if you're doing it like that at home, but some places like, it'll strip the terpenes, but it'll put it back.
Right.
But again, when you see full spectrum, it's pretty much the whole plant extraction. So that includes terpenes as well.
Right. But you're saying that sometimes they add botanical terpenes or possibly cannabis terpenes back in.
Yeah.
That full profile.
Mm-hmm. Some people, it'll say high terpenes, but find out what kind of terpenes. Because I know you said botanical, and that's where it gets people.
Yeah.
When I was running my dispensary, like, you know, there are certain vape pens that were like terpene driven, but botanical derived and or cannabis derived. So those are the key things. If you really want to be, if you're a major purist, go the cannabis terpene or terpene derived from cannabis.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that is an important distinction. Mm-hmm. Now, do you ever just still do like coconut oil or butter with like the old fashioned way when you're putting your trim, mixing it in with the butter and doing it that way versus a concentrate?
Yes. It's been more easier. And I'm just trying to go less solvent, like with an alcohol base, like I said, mm-hmm. I'm cutting down on the alcohol and, you know, just the less chemicals, the better. The old school route of just, you know, decarboxylating the flour and then extracting with oils is the best route. Mm-hmm. Have a crock pot or there's amazing machinery. Mm-hmm. I just got a partnership with Olivo company. They do extraction. The machine is like, it's pretty much like the Keurig of cannabis extraction.
Yeah. They look like coffee makers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so with the technology now, it's like, you know, why make it difficult, you know?
Right. Cause that is definitely a few extra steps, especially if you're making cannabis treats at home. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting though, because it sounds like you can really make the concentrate really potent versus what you might do with a cannabis oil or butter. Now, we were kind of talking about this before we started recording today, and that's about the saturation point, because I have mm-hmm. had a friend that asked me about that. Shout out to my friend Temple Grower. But he was wondering if there is a point where you just can't put any more THC or the cannabinoids into your infusion. Like mm-hmm. if there is a point where, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I feel like there would be a max because each flower, it has a certain percentage, but it's not going to get any more, right? If you have two plants that are about 20% THC, the potency, if you put them together, it's not going to be 40%. It's still going to be 20% the same potency, I would assume. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they say the more flower, it can get higher. It just depends on, what do you call it? What you're extracting. I mean, if it's just flour, there is, I feel like there's a point of you can't put any more into that oil, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I would suggest getting a higher, you know, if you're going by creating a higher potency, then either get a higher potent strain.
Right. Or opt for the concentrate instead.
Right.
Right.
And okay. Also, like, I mean, my preference or my recommendation is like, well, why would you waste all that flour, you know, like, because my rule of thumb, it's like, let's say you use 16 ounces of coconut oil. All you'll need is literally like maybe an ounce of flour
mm-hmm.
for the perfect yield, you know. Right. So
adding more isn't necessarily going to lead to way higher potencies, which right. is kind of what I found myself mm-hmm. making my own infusions.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for answering that. Now I was going to ask if you use any kitchen devices like the Levo mm-hmm. or anything, do you recommend any other ones or do you ever do any, immersion circulating, like mm-hmm. anything like that?
I haven't done any immersion circulating. But yes, Levo, I just started, I'm actually going to open it up later.
Okay.
I don't have any other tools really. I've kind of, again, made use of what's out there already. Like there's so many amazing brands. It's clean, it's efficient. It has the right, you know, labeling where it helps guide you on like what you want to create. You mm-hmm. know, nowadays you could get like oil at 1500 milligrams of THC. Why do you need so much? You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I get it. Like some folks that like, that are in like chemo treatment, they do need higher dose. But again, you could go to any dispensary, get a concentrate, a clean oil, mix it in with your favorite oil. And then from that oil, you could cook it with any of your foods.
Right. If you, so you can just add it to what you already have.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I don't want folks to overthink in making edibles. Like anybody could do it at home. You know?
Yeah, no, that's very true. Sometimes we do like to overthink things, but like you said, right in the beginning, you made an infusion in your crock pot and then you went out and you bought like a brownie mix. I mean, it can be as easy as that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's it.
Okay. Do you have any, have you ever used any like devices for testing potency, or do you just do like calculators? You just figure it out the old fashioned way with pen and paper? Or how do you like to, figure that out?
For calculation, it's mainly just through the flower strain itself.
Okay.
You know, depending on the strain you're using, you know, just look at it, leafly or any, you know, you could get the strain potency usually from, a website online. It's an average, you know, because mm-hmm. they can average on potency. It could be 15 to 20 milligrams or percent. So basically you take that percent and that will help you gauge in what you're creating.
Right. Yeah. I do find it's important to figure it out. I often use, I have a device called T-Check, which I really like, and I've been using that.
I really want to try that.
Yes. I find it's great. Mm-hmm. The only thing is it doesn't test everything, because I made some infused sous vide duck fat yesterday and it
amazing.
It didn't like that. So it doesn't test everything, but for most of the infusions it will.
That's awesome. I should go look into that.
For sure. It's fantastic. But I do find now that I've made so many infusions, when I go into my infusions pantry and I find something that I haven't labeled with the potency on it, I don't want to use it anymore. I've gone to the point where I don't want to guess, because that usually leads to trouble. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's pretty important. People listening out there, do test, figure out the potency, because you'll be glad that you did later.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, to switch gears a little bit, you're working on your own edibles and beverage line, which is super mm-hmm. exciting. And you're hoping to have that out sometime in 2022. Can you talk a bit about the line and your plans for that, your vision?
Absolutely. I haven't made a full announcement, but it is in the works.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe if I come back on the show, I'll share the name and everything. But
that would be awesome. Yep.
As of right now, since, you know, the time of me making brownies in the kitchen, the cookies and all the things, and just learning how to dose correctly. Like that first time I tested my RSO, I really wanted to work on creating my own edible line. I've always created different things, in the past, you know, again, I've had a collective where, we would just sell my chocolates, from chocolates to little, again, brownie bites or little sweet treats. And it just brought me to now. I think from my experience of running a dispensary, getting into the legal market or the industry and learning the ins and outs of operation, definitely pushed me to now go the route of creating my own edible line.
That's so really excited.
I will say that it you know, I'm always all about my culture, the Philippine culture. So there will, you, once I do make that announcement, there's going to be a lot of influences of Filipino flavors and such.
That's amazing, because I'm in Canada, and I'm sure it's very different in the States, but a lot of the edibles on the legal market tend to be pretty standard, like, you know, gummies and cookies and stuff. So something with a Filipino influence would be really interesting as far as what's available right now on the market. So yeah, that's an exclusive then here. I love it. Now, where do you see the edibles industry in 5 to 10 years? Like, and I know have you ever done pop-up dinners yourself? Like culinary cannabis dinners? And do you ever think that will be something that we can all enjoy freely, or are they, mm-hmm. you know? Because right now they're pretty underground.
Yeah, they are underground. I love doing pop-up dinners. You know, I love entertaining in the kitchen. I actually have one coming up at South by Southwest. It's a secret session.
Oh, super exciting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's been a while. And again, you know, through pandemic and stuff, like, you know, mm-hmm. things were shut down. I definitely want to have more gatherings. I mean, as far as like pop-up dinners and such, like, I love it. You know, I still want to break that fear that people have with edibles, and really educate, and just also, again, just create an atmosphere that, like, hey, it's not terrible, you know, don't be fearful of it. And it's better than taking like any, over-the-counter medicine, you know, like,
absolutely,
headache, like, Tylenol is horrible for your insides. You know, like, you could easily take an edible and just, you know, just take the edge off of the headache. And
yeah, yeah, you know? I totally agree. As a fellow edibles enthusiast, I would agree with that 100%. And you're right about the fear surrounding, like, people who haven't done edibles before. It's often a natural entry point into cannabis if they're new to cannabis, but and they tend to gravitate towards edibles, but there's still always that fear that they're going to overdo it. Cause so many people have that story of that time when, you know, they ate too much and it didn't go well. So yeah. Now you also mentioned the dispensary. You're the co-founder of the People's Ecosystem.
Yes.
Can you talk about that and how you're making an impact in the cannabis space with your dispensary?
Absolutely. Well, we started, in about 2016, we started in the legacy market, literally from a closet and to a dispensary. We no longer have a dispensary right now. Just going through that whole experience, I mean, so many learning lessons. The industry is very challenging, so many obstacles, and it's a constant fight and battle. And again, the system makes it so hard to be sustainably successful in it. Mm-hmm. And the politics and everything, you know, the fight with the war on drugs is still happening. You know, folks are still in jail and, you know, and it's challenging again for Black and Brown communities. Mm-hmm. Me and my partners, we started the People's Dispensary because we wanted to be able to provide the cannabis medicine to communities that don't have the access or easy access to it. Because California taxes were crazy. You know, it would blow everyone's pocket. We were able to create an amazing customer, you know, retention. Like, we had our community come support and we provided for them. From coming from the legacy market and learning that we could be in a greater place in the industry, we acquired a dispensary in Portland, Oregon. So from there, that's where I moved to Portland for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. Learning the operation and, you know, just understanding how it works and being in the legal market, you know, is huge. And from there, like, you know, there were so many challenges, like I said. Then we ended up to sell that dispensary because we wanted to reopen our operation in California. So we put that on hold while we were trying to run the dispensary in Portland. And now I'm back in California. We reopened our the operation, our delivery service. Mm-hmm. And from that, again, you know, during the pandemic, we created the ecosystem. So the ecosystem, it's pretty much self-explanatory. We're a company that has a little bit of everything, you know, like, as that we call it, it's pretty much like a vertical license. You know, we are a place where you could get manufacturing, you know, a dispensary, if you will, or, you know, I mean, it's a little bit of everything. Again, like, we provide services for folks right now. Yeah, we provide services for folks that want to be in the industry and give them a pathway that's not as harmful of, like, you know, that of going the route by themselves. Like, in this industry, you definitely need support. You need the guidance, and it'll save you a lot of money. I think that's the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. So with the People's Ecosystem, again, we're supporting, you know, BIPOC and women-led businesses. Just creating an ecosystem that fits for all of us. And it's not like big companies that are buying you out or big companies that are stealing your company that you created and don't give you the full ownership that you deserve.
Right. So you're creating an entire support system for entrepreneurs, mm-hmm, in cannabis specifically. Exactly. So this kind of leads into the next question, because I saw on your website that you have something called the People's Pledge. And I really love that. And it highlights the vision that you have for the ecosystem and everything you're trying to accomplish. Absolutely. How does this manifest itself in the daily operations?
Let's see. Well, as far as, like, our pledge, I mean, it keeps us aligned, you know. It's any interaction, any relationships that we build with other people, it just, again, I mean, it's important. It keeps everyone focused. It keeps us in a place of this is the way that the economy should be. This is the way our ecosystem runs. And if it's not aligned with you, then unfortunately you have to keep it moving, you know?
Right. So you do everything with this pledge in mind. And if you don't mind, I will take a second and just read what the different points are. We are rooted. We educate, we invest, we shape and foster, we thrive, we recognize. Mm-hmm. And I think there is no better mission in mind to have than something like that when you're trying to support entrepreneurs and people just have new opportunities. So that's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Charlene, you're a true leader in the culinary and cannabis space. Mm-hmm. What do you attribute your drive? Because you have done so many different things. You are always trying new things, like a whole edibles line. And I've heard from a lot of people that that is very challenging to accomplish. Mm-hmm. You have the people's ecosystem. Like, you are driven and talented. Where does that come from?
Oh, thank you. You know, I've always been a go-getter. My drive is community. My drive is, I have so much passion in what I do. You know, growing up with all the things that I love to do, like, it's hard to stop me, you know. I've always been, you know, my parents guided me in a way that's like, go to school, then go to college. And, you know, going that structured route where I understand we have to get educated. And I understand that. But am I happy in that path? You know, I think what drives me is just doing what you love, I think, is important. And I mean, that's always kept me going. You know, I think the moment that I found myself more miserable was in the corporate world.
Yeah, I can understand that.
And understanding of how they work, I was like, how can anybody be in this till they retire? Mm-hmm. You know, my parents went the route of working at, you know, their career for over 20, 30 years, and then they retire. But, you know, it was challenging. And I could see the misery in folks when they work that long. And, you know, like, I have so many things I love, and it's like, why not obtain that? Why not get that? So, you know, I think my main drive too is just to influence the community that, hey, someone like me, you know, don't let that stop you. You know, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm someone that they could look up to as well, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly do that for sure. Do you have any last thoughts for the listeners of Bite Me, the show about edibles?
Let's see. I mean, explore, experience, trial and error, be safe about it. Understand, I mean, YouTube is everyone's best friend. That's like the new university for me, you know. But I would, again, like, just educate yourself and explore. Have fun with it.
Yeah, that's great advice. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so much for joining me today on the show. And I hopefully will have you back on when that edibles line is ready to launch.
Absolutely. Let's make that happen.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Chef Charlene Kaabe. I've linked to most of the things that we talked about in the show notes, including the last three episodes that I did featuring her recipes. If you want to connect with her, you can follow her on Instagram. She's really active over there, and she's always posting about what she's doing in the cannabis community. And lastly, I hope you'll take her advice. Explore some new things, try some different stuff, create some new edibles you might not have thought of trying before, and have fun. And as always, my friends, stay high.